Hello, everybody. Howdy, howdy, howdy. I'm Hank Wilson, and welcome to episode 75 of The Hidden History of Texas. Before I start, I'd appreciate it if you take some time, sometime during the week, to visit my friends over at ashbynavis.com. That's ashbynavis.com, where you'll find an incredible selection of audiobooks, all from Ashby, Navis, and Tennyson digital media publishers. Oh, and visit my website, arctxs.com, arctxs.com. I would greatly appreciate it. We've been talking about, or I've been talking about, some of the extreme weather events in Texas history. In the past few episodes, I've talked about some of our more devastating hurricanes. The one that wiped out the entire town of Indianola in the 1800s. How in 1900, a hurricane devastated Galveston. And last episode, in the 60s and 70s, we met hurricanes Carla, Beulah, and several others, all of whom battered the Texas coast and brought forth death and destruction throughout the region. Now, for a few decades after that, in the 80s and 90s, things were, well, seemed a little bit more peaceful. They were becoming peaceful. And even as the century changed into the 2000s, things really seemed different. They appeared different. Not exactly silent, but they did seem to be a little bit more subdued. You see, the ocean was entering a quieter rhythm, part of a natural heartbeat scientists called the Atlantic Multidecadal Oscillation. The waters of the Gulf were a little cooler, the winds aloft a little harsher, and that helped to slice apart many storms before they could rise into monsters. Some years, El Niño set up shop in the Pacific, tilting the balance of the atmosphere and turning the Gulf into a hostile place for hurricanes to grow. Now, storms still came, but many curved away, sparing Texas and spending their fury elsewhere. Now, to longtime coastal residents, it almost felt like a truce, as though the Gulf itself was taking a breath between great battles. But, as history always warns us, quiet seas are never quiet forever. Coastal cities in Texas received a warning that, well, things might be a little bit different when, in 2005, Hurricane Rita brushed the Texas-Louisiana border. And then, when Hurricane Humberto came along in 2007 and Ike in 2008, it was a grim reminder that Texas was always living on borrowed time. But before I get to the guys that hit Texas, the male hurricane names, I want to talk a little bit more about Hurricane Rita. Now, we don't hear a lot about Rita when we think about the major storms that hit Texas. That's because Rita made landfall on the Texas-Louisiana border in 2005. And that triggered the largest and deadliest evacuation in U.S. history and caused extensive wind and storm surge damage in southeast Texas. The chaos of the evacuation actually caused more fatalities than the storm itself. Well, what was it about the storm's path and landfall? In September 2005, just weeks after Hurricane Katrina devastated New Orleans in August of 2005, Rita intensified into a Category 5 hurricane over the Gulf of Mexico, with sustained winds of 180 miles per hour. It quickly became one of the most intense Atlantic hurricanes ever recorded. It did begin to weaken into a Category 3 before hitting land. Now, Rita made landfall near Sabine Pass on the Texas-Louisiana border on September 24, 2005. And it took an eastward turn towards Houston, and that helped it spare Houston. As the storm approached, a last-minute eastward turn meant that the most catastrophic storm surge hit southwestern Louisiana, sparing the Houston and Galveston metro areas from the very worst effects of the storm. Now, since Katrina had taken place only a month or so before, the thought of being in the path of another hurricane actually caused widespread panic, leading millions to flee the Houston and Galveston areas. Of course, trying to evacuate millions of people at the same time could and did lead to historic gridlock on the highways. The exodus of, are you ready for this, 2.5 to 3.7 million people resulted in massive traffic jams that turned major highways into parking lots. A trip from Houston to Dallas that typically takes about 4 hours or less if you drive as fast as a lot of Texans do, actually took more than 24 hours. Now, an unfortunate result of the panic was how the gridlock actually proved deadlier than the storm's winds. At least 107 people died during the evacuation, primarily from heat-related causes and medical equipment failure. One such incident involved a bus carrying nursing home residents that caught fire, killed 23 people. So now, what was the ultimate impact and effect that Rita did have on Southeast Texas? Well, that's an area that we Texans call the Golden Triangle. And it's made up of the cities of Beaumont, Port Arthur, and Orange. They all experienced hurricane-force winds that caused extensive damage. In Port Arthur, flooding from storm surge occurred and power poles were toppled by the hundreds. Galveston, though, was pretty much spared because of the change in the storm's track that resulted in a more manageable storm surge of only 3 to 5 feet for Galveston, and that was significantly below the height of the seawall. But Rita did still cause significant issues for Texas. Over 1 million people in Texas and our neighbors to the east, Louisiana, lost power from the storm. Some areas of southeast Texas remained without power for up to 6 weeks. Now, once again, Texas learned. We learned some lessons from the disaster. The disastrous evacuation exposed major flaws in state-level emergency plans, prompting officials to implement new strategy for future storms. This included clear evacuation zones and better coordinated contraflow, that's ways to move traffic on the highways. Now, the lessons learned from the chaos of Rita influenced future storm responses, including evacuation decisions for Hurricane Humberto in 2007. Now, Humberto was a surprise, and it's actually the kind of storm that keeps forecasters awake at night. On the afternoon of September 12th, it was barely a tropical disturbance in the Gulf of Mexico. But within 18 hours, Humberto had strengthened into a hurricane, one of the fastest intensifications ever seen so close to land. By the time it slammed into the upper Texas coast near High Island, its winds were howling over 100 miles per hour. Trees, of course, they snapped like matchsticks. Power poles toppled. Rain lashed across the coastal plains. Humberto's fury was brief, but its suddenness left people stunned, especially in the Jefferson and Orange counties of, once again, southeast Texas. Now, here's a big problem. Flooding and rainfall were the primary culprits of damage. Heavy rainfall from Humberto, which included a peak of over 14 inches in parts of the state, resulted in widespread flooding. The flooding damaged or destroyed dozens of homes, closed several highways, particularly again in Orange and Jefferson counties. At least 20 homes in Beaumont were flooded, probably more because it says at least, and 5,000 homes in Galveston County were isolated by road closures. Since the ground was already saturated from earlier summer floods, it rains a lot in southeast Texas. The flash flooding threat was enhanced. Hurricane-force wind gusts over 80 miles per hour were reported across southeastern Texas, which of course meant the wind would down and did down numerous trees and power lines, with at least 50 high-voltage transmission poles knocked down. This caused power outage for over 120,000 customers in Orange and Jefferson counties. Structural damage to homes was also reported, including roof damage and a carport collapse that resulted in one death. Humberto destroyed 25 homes in Texas, caused major damage to at least 96, and minor damage to over 240. Oil production was halted in the Port Arthur area as several refineries lost power. Overall, damage in Texas was estimated at about $50 million, and that's in 2007 dollars, which was much lower than initial reports due to the storm's small size and the relatively unpopulated area it impacted. Now remember, the area had been hit by Hurricane Rita just 2 years earlier, which may have limited the potential for even greater damage. They were still rebuilding, we were still rebuilding from Rita. Umberto became a textbook case for how quickly a storm can turn from, not much to worry about, into a dangerous hurricane. It was a wake-up call for the Gulf Coast, as if they needed more of them, but apparently we're Texans, we're stubborn, we do. Proof that when the Gulf grows quiet and warm, a storm can be born, grow, and strike all in a single night. Now, the next year, 2008, in September of 2008, the Gulf of Mexico was restless, and all eyes turned towards a storm named Ike. It was massive, a sprawling swirl that filled the entire northern Gulf. By the time Ike reached the Texas coast, its official wind speed made it only a Category 2 hurricane. But size can be more dangerous than strength. Ike was a giant, pushing walls of water ahead of it. In the early hours of September 13th, Ike roared ashore on Galveston Island. While only being a Category 2 strength when it made landfall, the surge it produced was a Category 5 surge because it had a 60-mile-wide eye wall, the night sky lit with flashes of power lines snapping. The sea rose in a monstrous surge, flooding homes, sweeping away cars, and swallowing entire blocks. Along the Boulevard Peninsula, some neighborhoods were erased. Houses ripped from their foundations. Nothing was left but bare slabs and sand. When morning came, the destruction stretched as far as the eye could see. Power was out for millions. Debris littered the streets of Houston, and the damage bill reached tens of billions of dollars. Ike became a grim warning to the Texas coast. Another one. A hurricane doesn't have to be a Category 5 to be catastrophic. Sometimes a giant storm is enough. Now, in 2017, Hurricane Harvey became the most recent large hurricane to hit Texas, and it won't be the last. It hasn't been the last. The Gulf boiled with a storm that seemed to come from nowhere. In 2 days, Harvey intensified into a monster, making landfall near Rockport as a powerful Category 4. Roofs peeled away, boats were thrown ashore, and steel signs twisted like paper. But the winds were only the first act. Harvey slowed to a crawl, and then, terrifyingly, it stopped. For days, the storm hovered over southeast Texas, wringing itself out over the land. Rain fell in sheets, relentless, unending. Neighborhoods turned into lakes. Highways disappeared underwater. Entire families waited on rooftops for rescue as the floodwaters crept higher. By the time Harvey finally moved on, it had dropped more than 50 inches of rain, the most ever recorded from a single storm in the U.S. Hundreds of thousands of homes were damaged or destroyed, and the cost soared into the tens of billions. Harvey showed Texans and the world that the most powerful weapon in a hurricane's arsenal isn't always its wind. Sometimes it's simply the rain that will not stop falling. The 2000s closed with a sense of unease. Ike had proven the Gulf could still bare its teeth. But it wasn't just the wind Texans had to fear. Water, slow, relentless, and rising, was about to take center stage as we close out the 2000s. Across the hill country and along the rivers, rain would fall in torrents, turning quiet creeks into raging monsters. Towns would be cut off, highways swallowed, and history would record some of the most destructive floods Texas has ever seen. If hurricanes are the sudden fury of nature, floods are its lingering hand, and in the years ahead, that hand would leave its mark on every corner of the state. Next episodes, I'm going to start talking about extreme floods that have hit the state of Texas. This is The Hidden History of Texas. I'm your host, Hank Wilson. Thank you for joining me.